Now, Reverend Matt has a few remarks for us.
Well, it's more than a few. You told me to be short, but, you know. I am the Reverend Matt Aspen. I am the current contract minister here, and I hope to be here for a very long time. My pronouns are he, him. And I am very excited to see many new visitors, new faces, and several faces who I haven't seen in a while. It is really good to see you, Rose. I don't know if you remember me, but it's been a while since we visited. It's good to have you. It's good to have you back here. I'm sure there's many people that are happy to see you. I was born in March of 1970 to a young woman living in New York State that gave birth to me in a home for unwed mothers in central Massachusetts. You see, New York State made it legal for a woman to terminate her pregnancy in April of 1970, just a few days after I was born, and 3 years before the Roe decision gave women the right to choose to terminate an unwanted pregnancy across the rest of our country. I'm going to say this many times today, but I'll start here. Motherhood is complex. As an adoptee, when you find out that the only mother you've known since you're only a few days old isn't your actual mother, it's not uncommon to try to imagine who your mother is and the circumstances surrounding your own entry into this world. I knew a couple of things. I knew that I was conceived sometime around the summer of 69, somewhere in upstate New York. So, of course, the story that I wove included Woodstock and music and flowers and all the most romantic notions you can imagine of the summer of love. I found my birth mom 4 years ago. Turns out the reality wasn't quite that cool. It involved a young man that my mother knew from high school, that was home on leave from the Vietnam War. It was after a night out with a group of friends, and I've learned that the word no was part of that conversation. I sensed that she wanted me to know her whole story, but it was also clear that it was really uncomfortable to talk about, so I've never really pushed. I had discovered enough to understand what had actually happened. I've never forgotten something I was told as a young man in my early 20s. For a person that identifies as male, the recreative act happens entirely externally to our bodies. But for a person that identifies as female, the recreative process requires the vulnerable act of entry into a body, either through invitation or invasion. And that makes all the difference within the experience. Motherhood is complex. I know that the man in this story passed away a few years before I found my birth mom, the direct result of severe alcoholism exacerbated from untreated PTSD connected to what he experienced in the war. War is never good for the soul. Its impacts expand far beyond just the soldiers on the battlefield. What a different life I might have had if those two had tried to raise me together. What a different life I might have had if she had tried to raise me alone. My birth mom says she wondered and worried about me every day since the moment she had given me away. Her father passed last year, and her mother is gripped by the deep fog of long dementia. Neither has ever been made aware that they had a grandson in the world. All because of a heavy shame that was carried around by my mother for most of her adult life. A shame that is only now being worked through now that I have reemerged into her life. Motherhood is complex. On the other side of all of this, my mother's decision to give me away in the late winter of 1970 all turned out generally fairly well. I was adopted by two simple, blue-collar people that wanted to have a child but seemed unable to do so. And although my adolescent and young adult mind might have been able to provide a laundry list of things that they might have done differently, becoming a parent myself showed me that they did the only two things parents need to do to ever be considered successful parents. I always knew that I was safe, and I always knew that I was loved. The reality is, it doesn't always turn out this way. Sometimes, the mothers that are tasked with the monumental job of raising a child do not have the capacity to provide one or both of those vital ingredients. I know that many in this room, and many millions more around the world, carry the deep wounding scars that can result when these two ingredients are not available in the necessary quantities. And in many cases like this, the cycle just repeats. Unless it is intentionally examined and healing work is undertaken and balance is restored to the system. For those of you in the room for whom this was your reality, we see you, we love you, and we commit to hold you as you continue the long process of trying to reground yourself back into a sense of safety. You are so worthy of love. Even in the best of circumstances, raising a child in this increasingly complex world is hard work. For those of you that are amazing mothers, this next part is going to start to begin to be for you. But I am going to start with a hard reality. But then I promise I'm planning to leave us on a higher note. Because the truth is, kids seem to come equipped with the capacity and the wherewithal to push and repush and find new ways to push every single button that we have. I used to have a coworker that was a mom. I would dare say I'd categorize her as a great mom. But she said something a few times which made me think that this must have been on her mind for a while. She said, "I would never, ever, ever," and she emphasized ever many, many times, "never, ever, ever condone such a thing. But there have been days, being a mom, when I could begin to understand exactly how the day of that mom that put her kids into the backseat of the car and drove backwards off the dock at high speed was probably going. Because motherhood is complex. Many intentionally enter into motherhood with a beautiful dream of what it will be like raising a perfect little being and watching them walk across the stage to get their diploma and launch into a world of success by whatever metrics you might choose to use. But sometimes that just doesn't happen. Sometimes children arrive or show up with challenges that were never imagined, but nonetheless require the creation of an environment that includes consistent love and safety sustained over several decades, which takes a lot of work, and sometimes just doesn't come with all of the expected rewards. For those of you in here that I know hold the extra burdens of raising children that came with challenges beyond what you expected, know that you are seen and you are held by this community and you are not alone. Motherhood is complex. They say it takes a village to raise a child, and I do believe this to be true. This community is surely such a village from everything I've seen. So many in this room are mothers that raise their children with the support of many others right here in this room. Those connections you made in those earlier days form the bonds that I can see are so strong they will never be torn asunder. And there are current mothers here experiencing the joys and the exhaustion and the laughter and the tears, all of the wonderful and challenging things that come from raising a child. And many of you mothers are here because you have seen the results, the additional support and resources that are available in a community like this that intentionally says, we know that the children among us represent our collective future. And it is our shared responsibility to do everything we can do to make sure each and every one of them has access to all of the love and safety that can be mustered, so that the important lessons that need to be learned to navigate this world have the chance to be imprinted on the delicate souls that are only temporarily in our care. So in whatever way we can, we each try to help with childcare. And we try to help with lessons. And we try to live by example. And we try to create new memories of things like dancing around a maypole. Not every child enters this world with access to the love of a mother or with the support of a community like this. Oftentimes, the situation of a pregnant woman sees when she glimpses the future looks very different than this. And it is for this reason, despite the fact that I am here because my mother carried me to term, that I adamantly support a woman's right to choose and will lend all that I can to the upcoming fight that we know is coming to ensure that that right is maintained no matter what. May we someday live in a world where each and every mother that chooses to bring a child into the world has the kind of love and support that is made available in a community just like this. And if a woman looks at her particular situation and realizes that the support that is needed to raise a child does not currently exist in her life, that she is able to make the difficult choice to spare her unborn child of trying to make a way out of no way. Now, I was asked to keep my remarks brief today, because we have a fun activity to engage in collectively outside. And I was also reminded the other day that one of the things that is appreciated about me is that I am the rare minister that understands that even though this community says it wants a full-time minister, you really don't want to have to listen to me drone on more than twice a month. I get that. So at this point, thank you for listening. I'm going to hand the pulpit over to Barb Park, an amazing mother in her own right, to help us learn a little bit more about this maypole tradition that we're about to engage with the kids in yet another round of making the memories that will last a lifetime for all in attendance. Just before I go, I feel obliged to offer the most important prayer that should be uttered whenever you think about the pains that every mother has endured to bring a child into this world, and the ongoing commitment that it takes to raise them the best they know how in the face of unlimited adversity. I recently uttered this prayer to the mother that raised me, who would have turned 85 just 3 days ago. It is a prayer we might all considering offering whenever we meet a mother among us. To the source of each miracle gathered here today, let us say, thank you, thank you, thank you. 1,000 times over, thank you.
Well, good morning. My name is Barbara Park, she, her, hers. And Renee asked me to talk about the maypole. She asked me actually several times. And because first I said no, because I haven't been really intimately involved in the maypole. So I had to do some digging. And I'm also hoping that people who do remember some things will tell me later, and I'll write an article up for the Prairie Fire about it. But so I dug through old prairie fires and such and talked to some people. I did look up the long history of the maypole, and it is a long history. It dates back to the pagan times of the Germanic people. And from there, it sort of morphed over to England and Wales, where it was picked up. and then was banned more or less during the Protestant Reformation for being way too frivolous. The first mention in the Prairie Fire was a joint program with FUS in 1971, which, of course, before we had this building. And then there was another one in 1977 when there was an invitation by Paula Elkins to a maypole and potluck at Folklore Village. We didn't have a place to do a maypole at that point because we weren't at a building that had a spot. Once we moved to this building, everyone I asked about the maypole here, the first words that came out of their mouth were Mike and Norma Briggs. And, you know, Mike and Norma, of course, were from England and Wales and brought, so it made sense that they were the source of getting maypole to us. And they were involved in the Morris Dancers. And a couple of times they brought the Morris Dancers with them. And I remember that because the dancers were dressed up with ribbons. It was wonderful. They were great. So somewhere along the way, we got access to a maypole. And I'm not sure if the first one ones that Mike and Norma borrowed, or if Aaron, when I talked to Erin Bosch, she remembered that Norma made one. And I don't have confirmation on either one of those things. But what I did see in the Prairie Fire was that it was tradition for the teens to unwrap the maypole the year before. If you remember, as you do a maypole, it kind of winds around itself and makes kind of an intricate pattern. But then, and then it's stored that way so that the ribbons don't get, you know, tied and knotted. But before you do it again, you have to untwist all of that, which apparently the teens did the week before. It's mentioned several times in the Prairie Fire. Now, this morning, we have no teens at this point, or maybe one. So there were no teens to do it. So a bunch of us went out there today and spent an hour untwisting it. It's quite a process. So whatever one they used eventually fell apart, and we had, you know, no access to a maypole. Well, and then Mary Mullen had some cedar trees go down in her front yard, and she put an article in the Prairie Fire email offering, you know, anybody who wanted to use any of that cedar. So Carl Wacker stepped up and took one of the trunks and made a maypole. And that's what we've used from 2016 to 17 and 18. And then, of course, there was a pause for the building renovation and the pandemic. But we're back now. And we have a couple of clips that Carl did of I think the first one 2016 and then 2018. There's always music because after all this is dancing. Anybody want to see the 2018 clip? Sure, they say, yes. But you get the idea that it's an over-under with people going in the opposite direction. You thought they were going to say no, didn't you?
Yeah, for those who didn't know, Mike was in there playing the squeeze box, right?
Right, yeah.
And Dan on the penny whistle.
Yeah, Dan was on the penny whistle and Mike Briggs was on the squeeze box. We're going to miss him doing that. It was an annual event.
Going out.
Oh, thank you so much, Reverend Matt and Barb.